Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Sport Diehard. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. And yes, this is my real voice. Sounds a lot better than it did last week. We are being brought to you by Gallagher's, the ultimate sports diehard friendly bar and grill. Don't believe me? Stop in there today and ask for Kieran or Aaron and make fast friends, enjoy good food, and watch your favorite team on high definition TV. I promise you. You will love that place as I do. You feel like family after you walk in there and you shake Kieran's hands. He's a great guy. But go check it out at 2751 East Broadway, Long Beach, California, 90803. I want to start off with, well, the NFL preseason leads us into what I would call the ultimate crapshoot, also known as the first 4 weeks of the NFL season. And I call it a crapshoot because, quite frankly, we do all this analysis of each team in the preseason, trying to figure out what each team does well, what each team needs to work on. And we try to do this before we see the teams play. Therefore, after the first 4 weeks of the NFL season, we tend to learn what we don't know. And this is when we start to learn about what we don't know, but more importantly, can learn what we can apply knowledge-wise for the rest of the season as the cream begins to rise towards the top. We didn't know some of the teams that have started out undefeated or with records well above 500 would be the Philadelphia Eagles, the Los Angeles Rams, the Atlanta Falcons. We didn't know that the Phoenix Cardinals, or the Arizona Cardinals, I should say, and the Carolina Panthers, the two teams that played in the NFC Championship game last season, would get off to 1-3 starts. We didn't know that the San Diego Chargers would forget that an NFL game is four quarters, not three. We didn't know that Bill Belichick would lose and be shut out at Gillette Stadium in the first time in the history of that stadium to the Rex Ryan-led Buffalo Bills, who got his first road win against Bill Belichick in 8 tries and his second victory over Bill Belichick. I'm sorry, that's erroneous. My first in 8 tries on the road against Bill Belichick. And I'm going to have something momentarily about how it seems we narrowed down how successful a coach is based on how he does against one particular team, one particular coach, because it's something I've noticed on Sports Talk Radio lately. I've also noticed a lot of things being said on Sports Talk Radio that, quite frankly, don't make much sense to me. I'm going to have those things for you momentarily. But the first 4 weeks of the NFL year is a crapshoot. There's a lot of hijinks. It is extremely unpredictable. It's totally unpredictable. It's totally unpredictable in that we can't put our finger on why things happen. In week number 4 of the NFL season, was the epitome of that. A lot of things happened that we did not see coming, which is why I wonder why we make predictions. It's also why I wonder why we even have expectations in preseason of how teams are going to do when we don't know for sure what the future is going to hold. I've always said that having expectations is akin to knowing what the future holds, therefore having those expectations is reasonable. But we are normally wrong when we try to predict what the future is, therefore why have expectations of anything except ourselves. The NFL is the most unpredictable league in the world because there's so few games and the margin between the best teams and the worst teams is razor thin. It's why the Buffaloes of the world can take out the Cardinals and the Patriots in back-to-back weeks but struggle in the first part of the season against teams that supposedly they should beat. Sports has always come down to it's not record, it's not reputation, it's matchups, and it's desire. And certainly the Bills had a desire to beat the Patriots. In Foxborough especially, Rex Ryan had a desire because Rex Ryan's job was on the line. I'm not sure that's the case now. The team fired his offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, behind his back. How did he respond? Back-to-back victories against the NFC Championship game runner-up last year, the Cardinals. And, of course, the AFC Championship game runner-up and Super Bowl winner 2 years ago, the Patriots, who might very well win a Super Bowl this year. You just never know in the NFL. But one thing we have to understand in following the NFL is we must accept what's happening, and we must not deny what is happening. We can't opinionize facts. This leads me into all the hullabaloo and all the questioning of how the Rams are 3-1 and the Eagles are 3-0. Teams that we assumed were going to struggle this year because of quarterback play. And in a little bit here, I'm going to talk about how a quarterback-driven league is the best way to maintain a quarterback-driven league, because our quarterback-driven league has a lot of guys getting hurt. I'm going to talk about that momentarily as far as how to make sure that if quarterbacks are going to be the thing of the NFL, that we keep quarterbacks upright and playing. Because right now there's a few quarterbacks out there that are really, really good that are really getting hurt by aspects of their team that is way more important than the quarterback position. I'm going to tell you about that momentarily. But first, the Eagles and the Rams. The Eagles are 3-0. In the preseason, if you're going to gauge how a team's going to do, most of us are going to look at the fantasy aspect of the team, the skill position players, the quarterback, the wide receivers, the running backs, the tight ends, the kickers, and the defense. Well, it just so happens that the Philadelphia Eagles are playing defense right now like no one expected. Their defensive line has been very good. Now, a lot of people say, well, they haven't played anybody, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk about in a second. Nonetheless, they have been very, very good. What's been even better is the Eagles' offensive line. Because if you're an NFL quarterback good enough to be drafted in the first round, as Carson Wentz was, regardless of what we know or what we don't know about him, you can be very, very effective. What made Joe Montana as effective as for years is that he had time to survey the field and use his intelligence to get it to the wide receiver in the right position to catch the ball and get yards after the catch. Jerry Rice and Joe Montana made a career of being able to do that together. And that's what Carson Wentz is doing. He came in ready to play. We were concerned about while he played at North Dakota State. He played against teams we haven't heard of. His team went 8-0 when he was not in there. And yet he was drafted number two, and here's the reason why he was drafted number two. Because he came in ready to play. It's not who you play against. It's not where you play. It's not the conference you play in. It's can you play. Carson Wentz can play, and he came onto a team coached by Doug Peterson, who was a former NFL quarterback, who hired an offensive line coach. And now the Eagles are going in the right direction. And they have a quarterback that they can build around and an offensive line they can build around. That's why the Eagles are 3-0, whether you saw it coming or not, and whether you question who they got their victories against or not. Because no NFL team makes their own schedule. That's college. Therefore, if you're going to diminish what a team accomplishes based on their schedule, you better understand that the Philadelphia Eagles did not make their own schedule. The NFL League office did. And you can only play the teams that are in front of you. Now, do we know how the rest of the season is going to go? Of course we don't. The Eagles could come crashing back down to earth for all we know. But I do know this. A team that starts out 3-0 getting the play that they're getting from Carson Wentz or from the trenches is a good football team. And if they continue to get good quarterback play and good play in the trenches, they will continue to win, because the most important aspect of a football team is by far the least known for and the least known, the least understood, I should say, and the least celebrated. It's how guys play in the trenches. Offensive line, defensive line. The Eagles happen to be blessed with a good one. And Carson Wentz happens to be blessed with a great deal of talent. I don't care where he went to play football in college. If he wanted to play in North Dakota, he could have played anywhere. But if he wanted to play in North Dakota, we shouldn't diminish that. Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl in the NFL. He played at Delaware. Steve McNair went to Alcorn State in the Southwestern Athletic Conference and nearly won a Super Bowl over the Rams back in 1999. It doesn't matter where these guys go. The question is, can they play? And Wentz can play, and he's got an offensive line that gives him a chance to play the way he's capable of, and he's got a defensive line that gets him the ball back. That is the bottom line, and we shouldn't be so surprised by that. What we should be surprised by and what we should learn from this is to base expectations of a team, not knowing how the first four games of the season are going to go in the crapshoot, as I mentioned. Not based on our last season, because trust me when I tell you this, no two seasons are alike for any team. They don't go as carbon copies as that was the case. There's no reason to play live games. There's no reason to go through all this fuss and muss. And not to mention the fact that in the NFL, every single year, did anyone see the Carolina Panthers winning their first 14 games of the year last year? Going to the Super Bowl? No. Every single year, there is a team that has a good team that no one knows how good it is. And they get off to a good start, and we start questioning as to why that is, as opposed to understanding why that is. Winning in the Football League is real simple. Effective quarterback play combined with above-average play by the guys who play in the trenches, because football goes from inside out. When you get good quarterback play and you get great play from the trenches, as the Eagles have, it filters to the rest of the team. It's like life. What happens to us in life? What happens to our life is based on what goes on inside of us coming out. Therefore, if we're constantly focused on what's going on the outside of us, that's what's inside of us, and that starts coming out. The Eagles internally have a much better football team than we realize, and Doug Peterson is a much better coach than we give him credit for. A rookie head coach, which means we know even less about this guy, and we're a little bit leery to accept his potential greatness as a coach. But the man can flat-out coach. And the Eagles, who've been a fairly successful franchise, especially when Andy Reid was there, and Chip Kelly's first couple of years, have generally been a playoff franchise every single year. Just the last couple of years, and Byron Maxwell's contract have kind of diminished that reputation. But at the end of the day, they have a good organization, they draft reasonably well, and they play well for the most part. And that's what they're doing now, and no one should really be surprised by that. You'll understand how that works. Which leads me to the Los Angeles Rams. The Los Angeles Rams, you know what they're doing really? No one knows how they're doing it. Todd Gurley hasn't had a 100-yard game in an eternity. Case Keenum is not beating the Rams with turnovers. He's throwing touchdown passes. He threw them against the Cardinals. He certainly threw them against the Buccaneers. And the Rams are blessed with arguably the best defensive line in football, led by Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn. You get A.J. Gaines back, a very good cover cornerback, to go along with Tremaine Johnson, and you've got the makings of a really good defense. And the Rams for years have had a very good defense, but now offensively, they're starting to do some things to make that defense pay off. Because when you have a good defense, you don't have to score a lot of points. The Rams struggled with points in the first couple of weeks. The last 2 weeks have been a little bit different. They score 37 against the Bucs. They score 17 against a very good Cardinals defense while holding them to 13. And I'll talk more about the Cardinals in a second. The Rams, what they're doing really, really well, and it's going to sound foolish, is they're playing within themselves, and they're doing what they do best, and they're doing it in a way that is so unspectacular, so methodical, so bland, that we just think it's dumb. But the bottom line is, winning games in the NFL is not supposed to be pretty. They are winning the best way they know how. You get back-to-back victories against the Seahawks and the Cardinals, who have dominated the NFC West for the last 3 years. You're doing something right. And generally, the Rams have done very well against division opponents. Outside of the division is where they've struggled. So if people want to question whether the Rams can maintain this level of play outside of the division, that's fair. But to question them being 3-1 with the schedule they've had early, a road game against Tampa, an early game, and I know Tampa's a weak team, but when you have to go from west to east, from L.A. to the East Coast and play an early game, that's not an easy game to win. And NFL games are not easy to win because, as I said, the margin between the best teams and the worst team is razor thin. Therefore, discounting that victory is basically saying the victory didn't happen, and that is absolutely invalid. And quite frankly, it's not something I'll entertain on a show like this. We're going to tell it to you like it is because we do this 1 hour a week. The Rams, that was a good victory against the Tampa team under adverse circumstances, and they pulled it out. Then they go to Arizona. There's no time change here. Well, not yet until we get into daylight, until we get into standard time here later this month. They beat the Cardinals, matching their strength against the Cardinals' strength defense, But having an offense right now with quarterback play that, quite frankly, is far exceeding what the Carson Palmer-led Cardinals are doing right now. Carson Palmer is looking like a guy who should retire. And I'm going to talk about that momentarily on the Cardinals as well, and how disappointed they've been to start, and why we shouldn't be so surprised that they have been disappointed. But the Rams are just playing within themselves. And that's a good way for them to play. They're not going to win in a way that is L.A. But I'll tell you this about Los Angelinos. You're either winning, you're either playing spectacularly in losses, or you're winning. As long as the Rams keep winning, I'll guarantee you that L.A. fans won't care how they do it. It's kind of like in Game 7 of the 2010 NBA Finals, when the Lakers won 83-79 over the Boston Celtics to repeat as NBA champions. No Laker fan gave a damn as to how ugly that game was. I certainly didn't. I was too busy celebrating beating a team that beat us 2 years earlier. That's the bottom line. It's whether the Rams went pretty or they went ugly with just enough quarterback play and a dominant defense. And skill position players that are currently good at what they do. Tavon Austin is good at what he does. He's not doing what the Rams need, and that's to have a receiver over the top. If the Rams get a receiver over that can tear off the cover of a defense, as my buddy Jack would say, and that can take their offense to a level. But right now, in the matchups they've had, they're playing within themselves. They are winning the best way they know how. It's not pretty, but it's working. And that is the bottom line. If it's working, you know, if you're not working, you're lazy, right? Any human being that has a job that doesn't work is considered lazy, right? Well, if it's working, why are we criticizing what's working? You wouldn't criticize a human being working hard, would you? Why criticize a system for working, even if it's not quite working the way you want it to from an aesthetic standpoint? We're just too busy looking for things to criticize and creating a lack of understanding as opposed to understanding how teams win in the NFL and how the Rams are winning is by playing within themselves and just grinding these games out. How the Eagles are winning is a combination of skill, but very effective player from the trenches. That's the bottom line, and that's how it is. Now, the Atlanta Falcons, they're winning with style. Matt Ryan leads the league in yards, touchdowns, and passer rating. Their defense isn't that great, but their offense is more than making up the difference. They had a dominant defense with the Broncos last year, and their offense was kind of shaky. At times, it was ugly. But they won a Super Bowl with that. Who's to say that the Falcons this year can't win a Super Bowl having their offense be their best defense? You just keep putting points on the board and keep pressuring teams to try to do the same. I remember when I watched a playoff game, my alma mater, Irvine High School, against the Rancho Santa Margarita Eagles. It was a game that featured one punt. One. And that one punt was made by Rancho Santa Margarita. This was back in 1992, if I recall, or maybe 93. It was one of those 2 years when Irvine repeated as Southern Section champions, first in Division I, then Division II, then Division III, from 92, 93, 94. And I predicted in that game the first team that punts is probably going to lose this game. And that's exactly what happened. Rancho Santa Margarita punt, Irvine won the game, 42-35. The defense in that game obviously was not the dominant factor, but it didn't matter because Irvine scored on every single possession. If that's how the Falcons are going to win games, so be it. If the Rams are going to win games, grinding games out, grinding 17-13 games out, so be it. If the Falcons are going to win with offense, 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 so be it. If the Eagles are going to win with balance, so be it. But we can't discount what these teams do. Because of our own expectations, that's on us. My suggestion is that you don't have expectations anymore, and we see how the first four. I didn't issue any expectations this game because what I wanted to find out in the first 4 weeks is the teams that play well in the areas that we don't celebrate and we can't quantify, and that's in the trenches. And right now, the Eagles and the Rams especially are playing very well in the trenches, and their quarterback play is not a detriment to the team. And as long as that continues to be the case, they'll continue to win. If not, then obviously things will change very, very quickly. Thinking of things changing quickly, and actually, ladies and gentlemen, even though my voice is doing better here, I'm going to take a bit of a break because I'll be flying solo here tonight until about 8:30 when we come back on the other side, why the disappointments of the NFL season so far shouldn't be so surprising, why we shouldn't be so surprised the disappointments of the NFL are who they are. I'll tell you about that momentarily on the other side of the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, radioafs.com, facebook.com/radioafs. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Itzko. It's being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill. Yeah, and to back up what I said about the Philadelphia Eagles before, they have 10 sacks as a team, and they've only given up 4 so far, and 6 of the sacks have been accounted by 2 players, Fletcher Cox with 3 and Brandon Graham with 3. That's 1 sack a game. They're basically giving up one sack a game to Carson Wentz, which you don't want to see your quarterback get sacked ever. But if you have more six more sacks than sacks you've given up, that is definitely going in the right direction. It also shows that the Eagles' offensive line is regaining continuity because they've had some injury issues with Jason Peter, one of the best tackles in football. But their offensive line is coming together, and their defense is really steadily up here to get pressure on the passer, and they're number three in total yards right now, giving up 284 yards a game with 284 yards a game with Wentz getting nearly that in passing as far as what he is doing. So the Eagles, what they're doing here is they're winning very basically by getting more productivity from their quarterback and limiting other teams' quarterback and running back play and getting that solid play in the trenches. And we shouldn't be so surprised by that, no matter how little we knew about the Eagles coming in. But nonetheless, for every team that surprises in the NFL, there's a couple of teams that are disappointments. But we shouldn't be so disappointed, or we shouldn't be so shocked that these teams are disappointed. If there's two I'm talking about. I alluded to one before. The Arizona Cardinals. The other team is obviously the Carolina Panthers. Super Bowl runner-up and a team that had very high expectations coming into this year. In terms of the Cardinals, you know, one thing I'm always leery of is that whenever you hear about a team, you hear what that team is known for. Well, the Cardinals have really good defense. Tyrann Mathieu is like Troy Polamalu. He's everywhere. He's lining up at the defensive end and linebacker, and of course at safety, at defensive back at Rover, and yes, there is some validity to compare it to Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, to Troy Polamalu in terms of the style of play that those safeties incorporate. But I kept hearing so much about the defense. The natural question in my mind is that why are we promoting something about the Cardinals we already know? We know they have a good defense. Heck, they played pretty well against the Rams yesterday and holding the Rams to 17 points. The only problem was is that the Cardinals only scored 13 points and were favored by a touchdown to win that game after flying to Buffalo the following week, similar situation to the Rams. East Coast game, early start, they lose, the Rams won. And the Bucs and the Bills, quite frankly, there's not much difference, you know, in terms of how successful those teams have been so far, but the Rams did their job. The Cardinals didn't do theirs, so we assumed coming back home, and I did the same thing as well. I assumed the Cardinals would come home and they would take it out of the Rams. Well, the Cardinals right now, it's a good thing they have defense as their calling card because that means they have a chance to win a game. Problem is, in order to win the game, you have to outscore your opponent. And that's not something they're doing right now. The Cardinals last year, and Carson Palmer especially, who had his first all-pro year since he left Cincinnati when he threatened to retire from Cincinnati because they had $80 million in the bank. That was the last great season he had offensively before last season in which he had a resurgence that no one saw coming. And now he is reverting back down to earth because he's got old man's happy feet. He looks very uncomfortable in the pocket back there, and he's not a mobile quarterback. Therefore, when an immobile quarterback like Carson Palmer starts moving around, that is going to lead to some very bad circumstances. And that's what's happening with the Cardinals. They are reverting back to offense that they were not known for last season. Their defense is still good, but their defense isn't scoring enough points to make up for the inadequacies of the offense. And I'm not the least bit surprised by this because the Cardinals last year, when they faced the Panthers in the NFC Championship game and were blown out, posed as having an offense that could play very well against teams that they should beat, but not very well against dominant defenses. And if you're going to go to the playoffs and get to the Super Bowl, you better have a really good offense to do that, to go along with that great defense that we hear so much about out of Arizona. So I'm not that surprised that the Cardinals have been disappointing so far, because quite frankly, I think they peaked last year. And I had Seattle winning the division this year, and I had San Francisco coming in last place. Seattle may still win the division if they can catch the Rams, because they're a game behind the Rams right now by virtue of the tiebreaker. And the Niners are in last place right now, will probably remain there. But the Cardinals aren't very far behind right now. Now, I expect that they will probably finish in the top three of the division. The top two, only if they can pick it up. offensively, and Carson Palmer can start to show flashes of what he showed last year, throwing passes to Larry Fitzgerald, a Hall of Famer in the making, and Michael Floyd is a very good number two receiver. But the Cardinals, you know, when a team gets to a certain point, you expect that they're going to take a bit of a step back, especially when they lose, because when a team loses in the playoffs, it's exposed as to how they lost, and then teams the following season start exploiting that. The hardest team to beat in any following season is a team that won it, because now you have to take it away from them. Because they had a team good enough to win, and they're a team that wants to keep winning, wants to hold on to what they had. That's what the Broncos are doing, and they're 4-0 right now. Because the defense is still playing great, and offensively, whether it be, you know, Paxton Lynch came in there for Trevor Siemian and played well. So whether it's him or whether it's Siemian or Lynch, they are getting better quarterback play this year than they got last year from Peyton Manning, a Hall of Famer, and the defense is still playing at a very high dominating level. They're 4-0 because of that, because their offense is getting better and their defense is still great. And their offensive line in Denver, as we all know, whether it be Mike Shanahan or Gary Kubiak, but generally those teams coached by those players or coached by those men play very well on the offensive line. If that's happening, you have a chance to win, especially when you have a dominant defense like the Broncos do. But the Cardinals don't have such an offense right now. Carson Palmer's got happy feet, and the offensive line for Denver, which got exposed by Carolina last year, teams are starting to copycat what the Carolina Panthers showed everybody in last season's playoffs. Which leads me to the Panthers. What got exposed by the Broncos against the Panthers was how shaky their offensive line is. Ken Newton right now, a lot like Andrew Luck in Indianapolis, is running for his life as an MVP caliber quarterback. I would argue that the two best quarterbacks in the league right now, not just because of productivity, but because of how much they do despite the fact that they are not getting a lot of protection, are Andrew Luck and Cam Newton, because literally those guys make plays happen on their own if they're not getting help from their offensive line to give them time to make their proper reads down the field. But Cam Newton is now starting to get hit because he's running as opposed to staying in the pocket. And he needs to stop doing that. He needs to get rid of the ball to Kelvin Benjamin. And he needs to protect himself, continue to get hit. And the Carolina Panthers need to consider the possibility that their offensive line, particularly Michael Orr on the blind side of Cam Newton, is getting was exposed by Von Miller in the Super Bowl last year, is getting exposed even more. And their secondary without Josh Norman is also getting burned quite a bit on long passways at the beginning of the year. They still have a great front seven led by Thomas Davis Sr., and of course Luke Kuechly, the middle linebackers. But right now the Cardinals, Having built the record they built last year behind great play or quarterback play by Cam Newton, are now getting exposed. And Cam Newton, no matter how great he is, if he's not getting protection and continues to try to run to try to make things happen, he's setting himself up for injury, but he's also emasculating the issue with the Panthers, and that's their offensive line. So the Cardinals and the Panthers both need to get that figured out and protect their all-pro caliber quarterback. And the Eagles and the Rams need to continue to do what they are doing. Which leads me to stuff I hear on sports talk radio shows. Sports talk radio show analysts unimpressed by the records of the Rams and the Eagles so far. Well, they haven't played anybody. Well, we know that's not true. Every team is somebody. And quite frankly, I'm a big believer that you mean what you say what you mean. They haven't played against teams that you're impressed by. Fine. Say that. But they haven't played anybody. There's a specific meaning to that sentence. You can exaggerate and assume we know what you mean, or you can just tell us straight out. And if these guys are going to be honest, then say in a way that is actually literal and makes sense. Well, they haven't played against anybody that I'm impressed by. Fine. But they played somebody. And secondly, like I mentioned before, if you have teams picking their own games and you feel like they're not playing, they're not challenging themselves enough, have at it. You can do that with college football teams. You can do that with the University of Iowa. But in the NFL, you don't get to choose who you play against. You play against who this league tells you to play against in any given week. Therefore, you can only beat the teams that are in front of you. If you beat the teams in a business that is about winning, and the media is about winning too, And mind you, they've got to keep storylines going, and they have to keep radio shows going. A lot of this is about filling air, because a lot of these guys do a radio show every single day. I have the luxury of telling you the truth. And the truth of the matter is that when a team beats another team in the NFL, it's not something to be taken lightly. And if you do, then quite frankly, you're either filling time or you flat out don't get it. But we get it here in the Sport Diehard. So when you're listening to Sports Talk Radio, if someone wants to marginalize what the Eagles and the Rams have done, here's what you do. You turn it off and you tune into us. We will tell you the truth. We will tell you what you need to hear as opposed to what we think you want to hear. Because we really don't know what you want to hear because you don't call us to tell us that. So we're just going to tell you the truth. And the truth of the matter is teams that win, win for a reason. Teams that lose, lose for a reason. And to understand those reasons and to learn from those reasons is a hell of a lot better than to perpetrate that a team that is winning is still not good enough. Clearly, they are. It's like perceived reality. You can't perceive reality. It either exists or it doesn't. Perception is not based on reality. Yes, we say that in this country. That's a man, by the way, because perception is reality in our country, that means the media can exist with all the BS that it likes to put out there. But the fact of the matter is, if it's reality, there's no perceiving it. It actually exists. And the reality is, when a team has won all their games, and the majority of their games, there is a reason for that, and we should understand that reason. And we should also understand the reason why teams are losing. The Cardinals and the Panthers having losing records so far has got nothing to do with their quarterbacks. It's got to do with how their quarterbacks are able to play in the circumstances that they are put into. Because while quarterback is everything in football, what's even more important, and this leads me to the next thing, is the guys are going to allow the quarterback to be the quarterback. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the offensive line. I'm talking about the trenches. I'm talking about receivers that run routes, that have a chance to run their routes and catch the ball. But the offensive line is a quarterback's best friend and is the most critical part of any football team. Because every quarterback in the NFL is good enough to be there. But there's a lot of offensive lines that never come together. And if offensive lines are coming together and you've got a quarterback good enough to play in the NFL, you've got the makings of a winning formula. Therefore, the NFL being a quarterback-driven league, where we have a lot of quarterbacks that are either just not worthy of the contracts they got. Tyrod Taylor, yes, he played well yesterday against New England, but wasn't spectacular. Certainly not as spectacular to the level of a $92 million contract. But why he was able to accomplish what he was able to accomplish was the offensive line for the Bills. And that is the key to maintaining a quarterback-driven league because if you're going to have a quarterback-driven league and you want guys that are good, continue to play well, because the only way these guys that can be good is if they play. It's as simple as that. And the fact of the matter is, we need to be more understanding of how offensive lines impact the game of football more so than quarterbacks. Because the more we talk about quarterbacks, the more we miss it. If we want to truly be right and understand these teams, be able to predict what they're going to do, you understand everything you can about the guys that play in the trenches, the guys we care the least about, but what we should care the most about. Because when you understand that part of the football team, you understand that football team. And if you want to maintain your precious quarterback-driven league, guess what? We need to scrutinize the offensive linemen that are drafted as much as we scrutinize quarterbacks. We need to have an understanding of that because quarterbacks are the key to our league remaining interesting and being worth talking about on radio shows across the country, on blogs, on TV, whatever the case may be. Therefore, I would argue it's not really so much a quarterback-driven league. It's an offensive line-driven league, keeping quarterbacks upright so they can be who they are. So that Cam Newton could be Cam Newton. So that Andrew Luck can be Andrew Luck. And right now what Andrew Luck is doing in Indianapolis with not having an effective offensive line to protect him, it's absolutely amazing. It's almost as if he's blocking for himself while making throws and while making plays as a quarterback. He's absolutely amazing, and I feel sorry for what he's going through in Indianapolis. And what I feel even more sorry for is that he's apologizing. I got to be better. Honestly, Andrew, if you were any better, you'd be perfect, and you'll never be perfect. you are being as good as you possibly can be, but in the ultimate team sport, your team is letting you down. Your offensive teammates are letting you down. Your personnel people are letting you down because they've been so concerned about filling skill positions with Frank Gore and Andre Johnson that your offensive line has fallen behind, which is why I have the following proposition. The highest paid member of any team is a quarterback. The second highest paid player is the offensive lineman on the blind side, the offensive tackle. If we pay offensive linemen a little bit more and quarterbacks a little bit less, Tom Brady has done this for years. See, Tom Brady understands why he's been very successful in the NFL, why he has longevity in the NFL, why it looks like he can play another 5 years, because he doesn't get hit. Yes, he got hit in 2007, had that knee injury. Then Matt Castle came in and led the Patriots to 11-5 mark that year. But Tom Brady has sacrificed how much money he can make for years to restructure his contract with the Patriots. Why? So that they can put players around him, allow them to play at a high level. That's how Indianapolis seems to do that with Luck. That's how Carolina needs to do that with Cam Newton. And this is a good time for me to take another commercial break because you can see my voice is starting to drag, so I'm going to drink some water here and some honey. And I'm going to come right back here. We're going to finish off this show strong. But let me end this segment with this. It doesn't matter how driven your league is by quarterbacks. They're driven by quarterbacks we know can play. If they are not able to play because the offense around them is not functioning at the highest level possible, which allows them to function at the highest level possible, it's not possible. Therefore, we need to be more mindful of the impact of the offensive line on football and understand more about those guys and scrutinize that aspect of the draft as much as we scrutinize quarterbacks. And make sure they understand that a quarterback-driven league at the end of the day is dependent upon people that we don't celebrate or know enough about. You're listening to Radio AFS. You're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. And actually, I got a caller calling in here in the last four of 1469. Before I go to break here, let me go and break him in. Thank you for calling the Sport Diehards with Radio AFS. You're talking with Steve. Who am I talking with?
Steve Piskowitz. Hello, it's Dre Rock giving you a call, checking out the show.
Mr. Dre Rock, one of the best music artists in the country that a lot of people don't know about, although I get the feeling a lot of people are getting to know you now. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic, man. I'm fantastic. I just threw me in to call into the show, man. I've been busy, so I had a chance to call in tonight. The last few minutes, I wanted to call in, and I heard you talking about the offensive lines, and people don't realize how important that offensive line is.
Exactly, and certainly your Browns know a thing or two about that. Mr. Dre Rock is a big Browns fan, and I got nothing but love for him for that, because if there's one difficult aspect of being a sports fan, it's being a Browns fan, and being a Niners fan is not much better, by the way. Talk about that as far as, you know, why is it we undervalue the offensive line as much as we do because we're so busy, focused on quarterbacks that need these guys on the offensive line for them to be who they are?
I think it's okay. This is just my opinion. Sports fans. Some sports fans have never played sports, any type of organized sports. I was fortunate. I was an athlete when I was younger. So the whole team concept of this mechanism that everybody comes together. Well, everybody comes together for the common goal to win. But the process of getting there it's a milestone. So if you're not, let's say you have a group of guys. This one guy is skilled. Say he's the running back. He's skilled. Okay, this guy is a monster in space. Once he gets in space, he's gone. He's got the jets. He's running like a 4.2,
right.
4.3. But when that initial snap happens, there's a lot of things that go on between the lines in a football game where certain things have to go right. If this guy's not pulling to the right and picking up the block or whatever, or because the offensive lineman let a guy get through, the play, you know, now you're making that back work extra hard. So I'm saying that to say, I'm kind of hopping around, but it's still on the same point. Everybody has to do their part to to the extent of expertise. That's why you look at teams like the Patriots. I mean, and we had Bill years ago in Cleveland. They just didn't give him a time to turn the team around. Bill, I mean, look at how Bill ships guys out of there. He can be close to that player and love that player, but as soon as he sees that player slipping, what does Bill do? He ships him off, brings another fresh, because he understands the mechanism of, I have a slow quarterback, he's accurate. So he's amazing when he has time to do what he needs to do to get us points. So I've got to keep that wall in front to give him the time to operate. And if you look at the receivers, they don't, New England's receivers aren't like the greatest in the world, but they're consistent. So, and for Cleveland, we just don't play consistent football, man. I mean, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I've been a Browns fan since 5 years old. I've witnessed all the horror stories with the Browns. It never strayed from me for loving my Browns, but you plug one. I call Cleveland the plumber's team. They plug one thing and then two more holes pops up. And then they plug three, the two holes that popped up, then four pop up. Now they plug three and then they get a half of a piece to plug a half of a part, and it just never comes together. I think, for me, I think RG3 was the wrong fit for Cleveland anyway. We're at AFC North, man. You got to have a big, durable quarterback. Carson Wentz would have fit good in Cleveland, man. And you saw what happened when they played the Eagles. The guys.
And the Eagles, yeah. You know, they've got a couple of guys in there right now, you know, Brandon Fletcher Cox and Brandon Williams, that, you know, have a combined total of six sacks in four games. I'm sorry, three games, actually. So it's two sacks a game between those two guys. And a little early in the air. So, yeah, go ahead.
We were talking offensive line. Look at Ezekiel Elliott. Was that Dallas drafted him with those rope players up front? I bet he was like, "Thank you, Jesus."
Look at Dak Prescott. Oh, Dak Prescott. Now, mind you, he's not throwing bullets down the field, you know. And eventually, they're gonna have to have that for their offense if they're gonna make a deep playoff run. You got to be able to beat defenses over the top. But with an offensive line like that, you have the chance to get positive plays every single play. And those add up after a while and lead to field goals and touchdowns and the thing you need to put points on the board. What the Cardinals aren't doing right now, certainly what the Browns aren't doing right now in any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, you were spot on with your point about the offensive line and everyone on a football team having to do their part. And in regards to Tom Brady, and maybe every quarterback needs to take a cue from this, when you think about Tom Brady, and mind you, I'm not a Tom Brady fan, but this is worth mentioning here. If you're a quarterback, this is a mindset you may want to have. Tom Brady has been in the league for 17 years, has basically played for 15 years straight as a starter. And he has not made the maximum amount of money on any contract he's ever had with the Patriots. He is constantly restructured, allowing the Patriots flexibility to put players around him that have allowed him to go to not one, not two, not three, but six Super Bowls. That's a lot of opportunities for him to get hit. That's a lot of extra games on top of the regular season games that he's played. And he has played relatively injury-free for the majority of his career. And to me, if you can play 17 years in the NFL and make a little less money, you're going to make more money per year. You're going to make more money than if you are taking the maximum amount of money, which means teams can apply that elsewhere and maybe play closer to 13 years. And I think Tom Brady understands that I can make more money playing longer than I can playing shorter, but to play longer, I have to allow a team to put pieces around me. I'm going to play for a long time because I love the game. Is that fair to say in your mind, Dre?
I think so. And you have to look at, I always go back to the documentary on him when he ran his 40 time. It was probably the worst 40 time ever. Tom knew that he was slow, but Tom, the thing about that guy, man, he beats you up mentally too. So the mental aspect, football is a mental game to Tom. And it's mostly physical too, but you got to have some brains and wits to play the game. So Tom's like, hey, I'm not this extraordinary athlete, but if given the tools, given the tools to work with, I'll make it happen if I get the time, because it's all time in football. It's all time. So, when him and Bill, I imagine when him and Bill sit down and have those conversations, man, those backroom conversations, I bet they're pretty intense, but the reality of it is Tom knows that Bill wants to win just like Tom wants to win, so they just always seem to stay on the same accord, man, and get it done. And you can't hate that. I mean, so many people, I don't hate the Patriots. I'm not a Patriots basher, but, I mean, the Browns are my
right.
team. They'll always be my team. But you can't
right.
knock that, man, for, I mean, the way they've been able to do it, you know. And then, of course, people
but you can learn
that,
from it.
Yeah, you can learn from it. It's the consistency.
Yeah.
I mean, even look at the old 49ers teams, what Walsh did, with Montana. Yeah, it was the consistent, and they had some great players.
The Giants teams, too. The Giants teams, too, under Parcells and under Coughlin, you know, they were.
Yes, Coughlin from Farsell. I mean, it's just amazing that he's been able to do it that long and been able to be upright in that pocket, man. But it's that offensive line, man. The minute that Brady loses the offensive line that really protects him, if they fall behind the curve with that, then you see him step out. But at the rate they're playing,
yep.
the way
the quarterbacks that we love to watch and admire and talk about on sports talk radio shows such as this get hurt and they don't play it, then what is there to talk about? So we got to be much more mindful of that. Actually, Dre, while I have you here, I only have about 9 minutes left in the show, but I got to ask you, because you are not only a Browns fan, but you are a diehard Cleveland sports fan, and the Major League Baseball playoffs begin this week, and the Cleveland Indians, as led by two-time World Series winning manager Terry Francona, are being talked about as a potential World Series team, and I think there's something to that. How good are the Indians, in your opinion, and do you think that they can make a run to the World Series?
Oh, man. Well, okay. I started following the Indians more so because I just got that championship vibe from the Cavaliers from what we just did. And I always revert back to this when we had Albert Bell and Lawson and all those guys. Man, we were really on top of our game. Let's just see how it plays out.
Albert, don't call me Joey Bell and Sandy Alomar Jr. and Omar Vizquel and CeCe Sabathia when he won a Cy Young before he went to the Yankees and Roberto Alomar, you know, they had guys like that in the 90s. Just some great, great players. And the last World Series appearance was, you know, what was that, 1997 against the Florida Marlins when they lost.
Yeah. I'm just hoping – it's crazy because I got a friend that he's from Chicago. He's a Cubs fan, so – he and I go back and forth, man.
The Cubs are they're the trendy pick.
Yeah, but, I mean, Boston.
But how good is Cleveland? I mean, you know, handicap Cleveland
I think they can do it. I got to say that because, I mean, I'm gonna be biased. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, so I got to go with my Indians. I'm glad that they're in the position that they're in, because, you know, we're bleeding with the Browns not playing well. So, you know, we got Cavs, and now we got the Indians playing well. So I got to ride it out with Tribe, man. And I gotta think that they're going to put something together. So it won't be a cakewalk for them. But I think they can persevere, man. I'm really hoping so.
Well, the Cleveland Indians, I should say, they're sixth in hitting, they're seventh in pitching and in fielding, and I'm looking it up right now. They're 12th in fielding, so you'd like them to be a little bit better as far as picking up the ball, but certainly they're in the upper half of three major statistics. And again, they are well managed by Terry Francona, who's unflappable. I mean, nothing gets to this guy. He is the picture of poise, much like Joe Torre was when the Red Sox and the Yankees were going at each other for years. And you look at Francona, the Torre, and the line in the dugout, just standing there, and you didn't think it was a playoff game because of how calm and poised those guys were. And Francona's a proven winner, and he can certainly do the same thing in Cleveland. So they got the makings, and I think they got a great shot to get to the World Series out of the American League. I'm not buying the Rangers, and I'm not sure about the Red Sox either. I'm not sure they have enough pitching. They're obviously a very good hitting team. So I think the Indians all around, you know, have the ability to get the timely hits you need to pitch. You know, they're pitched their way out of situations, but also to be able to pick up the ball. Though, again, it's fourth place in the Major League Baseball. You'd like for that to be a little bit better, although you wonder what it is in the American League.
Actually, let me take a look at that in terms of the, because you face American League teams on the way to the World Series. They are eighth in total in fielding, so that's not too bad. Well, I think they got a great shot as well, and I just love the fact that they're managed by Terry Francona as well. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, give me your gut feeling, actually, your World Series matchup, and who do you think wins it all?
I got them. Man, I'm going with my Indians. I'm stepping out on the limb, man.
Well, I have the Indians in the World Series of the American League going up against Chicago, and I'll tell you why in a moment, Carolee, but what makes you believe the Indians can do it this year? I mean, they haven't won a World Series since 1954, well before you and I were born. So why could this be the year after such a long drought of not winning World Series?
You said it just a moment ago. If they take on the persona of Francona and just be cool and calm, because they're going to run up against him. They're going to have to weather some storms. But I think with Francona, man, he's so cool, and he has them having fun and playing cool and laid back. So I think when you're not under duress like that, and it's like, oh my God, we got a chance to do this. No, they just play, man. So I think that Francona is the reason why, and I think if they continue to follow,
they play very well at home, and you know, they play very well at home. Texas had the number one record in the American League, so they have home field advantage. Cleveland plays very well at home at 53-28. They were 41-39, so you're a little concerned if they get into the LCS with the Rangers, and then you have your wild cards. Baltimore and Toronto look like they're going to face each other for the playing game to go up against probably Texas, I would imagine. We'll see. I've got Cleveland. I've got Chicago. I was going to go with Washington, because one thing Washington is doing better this year than they had last couple of years is playing defense. They were number one in fielding overall in Major League Baseball, way down on the air as they've been the last couple of years. They just couldn't field the ball. They could hit. They've always been able to pitch. You know, Bryce Harper, Gio Gonzalez, Steven Strasburg, Matt Scherzer, you know, they've got the pitching from top to bottom. They've had the offense led by Harper, but this year they're picking up the ball and not kicking the ball like they were the last couple of years. But Bryce Harper is banged up. Steven Strasburg is banged up. Scherzer is amazing. Gonzalez is consistent. But if you don't have that consistent third starter, you know, how much are you going to rely on that? If Cleveland goes a little bit deeper, and certainly Cubs go a little bit deeper, and when you trade it for Aroldis Chapman to solidify the closing position of the bullpen, you know what they could do offensively with Chris Bryant and company, who's going to be the league MVP, it looks like. So I have Chicago coming out of the National League against the Cleveland Indians with, I'm going to say Chicago goes all the way. Sorry, Dre. But certainly Cleveland is back, and they have a very, very good team. So this may not be the only opportunity they have to win a World Series, so we'll see what happens. I want to thank you for coming on the show here, Dre. Great talking with you. I've got to wrap up here in the next 90 seconds. I'll call you after I wrap up here. You've been listening to Sports Diehard. Well, any final words, actually? You've got you're a musician, as I mentioned. Dre is a very gifted musician. We have about 90 seconds. Plug where people can find your music online.
Oh, yes. My new album, Therapy Sessions, is out. You can go to the website at www.drerocksmusic.com and check it out. I'm also available on iTunes as well. And check me out on Spotify. Check me out on
drerocksmusic.com.
Yeah.
And
check
and it iTunes out as well. And, of course, that's Marguerite Music Productions. So I will call you offline. Thank you very much for coming on, Dre. Great insight. And good luck to the Indians in the playoffs, and maybe the Browns can eke out some victories too, so it's not a completely dismal season for you until the Cavaliers start playing. Certainly they have a chance to repeat. I'll bring you back on here so we can preview the Cleveland Cavaliers, because the NBA season is right around the corner, and we'll see if the Cavaliers can repeat as NBA champions, which they have a great chance to do. Thank you. That's Dre Rock. Sports fan, sports diehard, football, Cleveland sports expert, and a great musician. Check it out at drerocksmusic.com and iTunes as well. We are out of here. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening to Sports Diehards on Radio AFS or RadioAFS.com, Facebook.com/RadioAFS. We don't just sports is not just an industry; it's a way of life too. and we're out.